All right, you guys, I am currently struggling with a pinched nerve in my neck, and if you have ever had one, you know the pain. So I am feeling super thankful for today's sponsor, Tenassi. Tenassi's CBD CBDA is 2 times better than CBD alone and better than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. It helps soothe and relieve my aches and pains, like my pinched nerve, and it's great for sleep and anxiety, so I put it on right before bed. Tenassi was discovered by a team of chemists and biologists at Middle Tennessee State University, and 5% of all revenue is given back to the university partner for ongoing research. It is THC-free and comes in a range of products. I love the topicals, but you can also choose from soft gels, gummies, and tinctures. Satisfaction is guaranteed. Try Tenassi for 30 days, and if you don't love it, you get a full refund. Go to Tenassi.com and use code MOM to get 25% off at checkout. That's TANASI.com to get 25% off your first order with promo code MOM. Since learning the truth about alcohol over 4 years ago, I've become pretty skeptical about anything that seems too good to be true. You know, like alcohol. If you're like me and you can spot a too good to be true health hack from a mile away, congrats, you're a skeptic too. Ritual knows that every good skeptic deserves a multivitamin that exceeds our standards. I take Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus every morning because it has high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It's gentle on an empty stomach and has a minty essence in every bottle that helps make taking my multis actually enjoyable. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/sobermom. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/sobermom for 25% off. Hi, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast. I'm your host, Suzanne, of My Kind of Sweet and the Sober Mom Life on Instagram. If you are a mama who has questioned your relationship with alcohol at times, if you're wondering if maybe it's making motherhood harder, this is for you. I will be having candid, honest, funny conversations with other moms who have also thought, maybe motherhood is better without alcohol. Is it possible? We'll chat and we'll talk about all things sobriety and how we've found freedom in sobriety. I don't consider myself an alcoholic. You don't have to either. And maybe life is brighter without alcohol. I hope you will join us on this journey, and I'm so excited to get started. Well, hello. Fancy meeting you here. You guys, I'm trying to just, do something different, and I don't know if that worked. It didn't feel natural. You know what I mean? So I'll just say welcome back. I'm glad you came back. I hope you had a good weekend. Happy Monday. I think you will love today's podcast. I have Madeline from Happiest Sober on. And the cool thing, you guys, Madeline's in her 20s and she stopped drinking. Could you imagine? I can't even imagine stopping drinking in my 20s. I mean, that wasn't even on my radar. We get into why it was on Madeline's radar, and that's because her mom is sober. She grew up with a sober mom, which I love this perspective. We're always talking about our kids and, you know, what their relationship with alcohol is going to look like. And it's pretty damn cool that we are normalizing sobriety and showing them a full life without alcohol without even really, we don't even have to try. We're just doing it by living it. And I think Madeline's a perfect example of that. She talks all about growing up with a sober mom and what that was like. So you will love this one. Also, before we get into it, you know, can you do this sober thing on your own? Sure. Yes, you can. You don't have to, though. I created the Sober Mom Life Cafe and the community for this reason. I think so many of us, especially coming off of COVID and the lockdowns and everything, we have felt alone for so long. We felt alone in our drinking. We thought we were the only ones. And I'm telling you, there's nothing better than being able to finally share the shame that we felt when we were drinking, share our darkest stories and get it out there in a safe space. And knowing that we are supported by a community of women who have been there, who understand and who can lead the way, I'm telling you, it is the most lovely thing and it is my favorite part about this whole thing. Come and join us in the Sober Mom Life Cafe. We're giving you 1 week free. The link to join is in the show notes. So you'll get to try all of the meetings for 1 week. You get to try the exclusive chat and feed and really take advantage. When you come to these meetings, speak up, even if you're nervous, maybe especially if you're nervous, even if you don't know what to say. If you jump, we will catch you. So come on over there. Come and join us. We would love to see you. Also, if you're loving the podcast, it really, really helps to leave a review. You guys, I think we've hit over 800 reviews. I'm trying to make it to 1,000. So can you help me? Leave a 5-star review. You know, those are the best. I really appreciate it. Say something kind. If you have a question that you want me to answer, leave it in a 5-star review. I'll answer it. If it's a question for my mom, the therapist, leave that there with a 5-star review and we will answer it in an episode. So I just can't thank you enough. And I hope you enjoy this episode with Madeline. Madeline, welcome to the Sober Mom Life podcast.
Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm happy you're on here. First of all, I have to say, there's a lot of sobriety content creators now out there, and I'm not going to throw shade. I'm not going to say the ones that I'm just like, oh, really? Yours, like the content that you create, the sobriety content is so well done, first of all.
Oh, thank you.
It's approachable. It's light, which you know I love.
Yes.
Like I love the vibe of yours is happy as sober. And like that is the vibe we're going for here. So I love it.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for saying that. And like all of that right back at you too.
Thanks. I know, because it's not easy to make content.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can go cheesy really fast.
Yeah.
Right?
100%. It's hard.
Yeah. It could go cheesy. It could go toxic positivity pretty quickly. And you don't do that. So I appreciate that. You guys, everybody go follow Madeline.
Thank you. I know it's hard with a page name like Happy is Sober. I try to make it really clear. Like I'm not saying life is perfect. I'm not saying life's always happy. I'm saying it is so much happier without alcohol in it. But we're still going to have our days. It's still life.
Yeah, life still gets lifey. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I did not even realize I was wearing my Happy Sober shirt today.
I know.
I did not
notice that.
That was not even, oh my
That's
God.
That's so perfect.
It's perfect. And you know it wasn't planned because I don't have my shit together that much to be like, yeah, this is good.
So good.
Okay, I want to hear your story. Let's talk about drinking and all of that bullshit before we get to the happiest sober part.
Yeah. So I had a pretty interesting kind of upbringing as far as alcohol goes. And I know, obviously, the sober mom life. I grew up with a sober mom.
You did?
Yes. She got sober at 21.
Oh.
Like walked into AA at 21 years old and never looked back, never drank again.
Okay. This blows my mind.
Yeah.
People who get sober, who stop drinking in their 20s. First of all, 21, that's incredible.
She had her whole 20s still.
Yes. Like I had a friend who stopped drinking when she was like 25. I was like, I was nowhere near, I should have. I mean, it would have served me well.
Right.
But like even thinking, just having that wherewithal to be like, no, you can actually stop this and you don't have to keep drinking. I wasn't anywhere close to that.
Well, that's the thing is that I got sober at 27. I had just turned 27, but—
You did?
I did, but I credit that with my mom. Like, I really think if I hadn't grown up with a sober mom and had it been such like a big kind of topic of conversation growing up, I would not have gotten sober as young as I did. Like, there's just no way. There's no way.
And so, like, did she talk about her sobriety? Was it open?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she talked to you about alcohol?
Yeah. So what actually happened? So my mom has been sober for, like, ever, like 40 years. And when she and my dad got married, my dad was sober as well.
Wow.
And then when I was, like, 8, my dad relapsed. My parents separated. He was kind of, like, absent, in and out of rehab, all of that. So it was a very big topic of conversation in our house. I have two older sisters. And so my mom and me and my sisters became this very, very tight-knit kind of unit. And it would be like my mom would be very open about what was going on with my dad's drinking. And so I never drank until I was allowed to drink. Like I didn't drink until my very last year of high school when my mom said like, okay, you can have a drink. Like my mom wasn't a big rules person, but that was her one rule. And my sisters and I, like none of us ever crossed that line. Cause I think we had such like a healthy respect kind of watching what happened in our family with it. So I didn't drink. I drank for 10 years, 17 to 27. And when I first started drinking, the one thing for sure that was always a thing for me was the anxiety the next day.
Ugh, the worst.
Oh my God. And I wasn't someone who really struggled with anxiety, but the very first time I ever got drunk, I remember so vividly like waking up and like I couldn't even get out of bed. I was like crippled with anxiety about the fact that I had been drunk. Now I understand better what was actually happening, knowing what alcohol does to us. Yeah. But for me, like my drinking was progressive. I never hit any sort of like external rock bottom. I was like a kind of a quote unquote fun drunk, but also kind of messy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sloppy was the word that was used for me in university.
I see you. Yeah.
So, yeah. When I was 24, I moved to Australia for a year.
Oh, fun.
Well, yes, but like I felt so justified in drink. Like I was like, I'm on a working holiday. I'm just going to drink like every day. It definitely, looking back, it like crossed my drinking over a line that I never could really like come back from.
Why do you think that is? Like the vibe over there was, I'm just going to drink every day? Or is that when alcohol came into your life every day? Like how did that work?
So definitely when I started drinking, I became like a big drinker. Like in like my school years after, like when I was in university, I drank a lot. And then like a year before I went to Australia, I like broke up with my boyfriend of 5 years. And I was like, let me just like, I'm just going to party. I'm single for the first time as an adult.
You went off the rails. Yeah.
Yeah. And then went to Australia. And I think like, yes, there's a big drinking culture in Australia, but there's kind of a big drinking culture everywhere.
No, everywhere.
Right.
This is like the running joke on this podcast that like, especially for the Real Sober Mom chats, she'll sit down and she'll say, okay, well, I'm from Michigan. And I know that people in the rest of the country think that they drink a lot, but people in Michigan. And then she'll be like, I'm from Florida. And I understand everyone else thinks it. And I'm like, you guys, no, everywhere is a big drinking culture.
Literally.
Like, the whole world. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So I can't really blame it on the drinking culture. I think for me, I was just like, I'm on holiday. I'm going to have fun. And yeah, like, I just felt so justified in that. So it was an interesting year because like I did have a lot of fun. I was in Australia, but because I was drinking for sure more than I ever had, like my mental health suffered so much. I was so anxious. And like, I don't think I really properly connected the two at the time.
That's what I was going to ask because, okay, so that first night that you drank when you were 17 mm-hmm. and then your anxiety spikes the next day, that sounds like you kind of put it together there to say like, oh, holy shit, because I've never really struggled with anxiety. Mm-hmm. And now after getting drunk, right, my anxiety spikes. So you kind of had it put together or you think not? That's just in hindsight.
I think looking back, it's interesting. I think that I grew up because of like my dad's drinking and because of all the conversations we had about alcohol. I think I felt, and my mom really drilled into us, like, don't drink to get drunk. Like, pay attention to how you feel. Have one or two drinks. See how it feels. If you notice that you want to keep drinking, be aware of that. And so the first time I got drunk, I think for me, the thing I felt anxious about was like, I did something bad. Mm. Like, I think I really internalized shame around that because of my family. So I think I just felt really guilty, but I don't think I really connected like the anxiety.
Got it. Like the physical actually effects of alcohol.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that your mom talked about it because I mean, kudos to her for even like bringing it up, right?
Uh-huh.
It's also, it's really tough advice. And it's great advice in a vacuum, right? If alcohol didn't change everything about our brain and how we thought, mm-hmm. right? And so you can't have those thoughts of notice how I'm drinking because all of that stuff is offline. And so then I think it does just put the onus on us. Like, well, you just have to do it better. Like you just have to be a better drinker. But mm-hmm. in saying that, like, it's also very great that your mom was actually just even talking about alcohol.
For sure.
Because when I grew up, right, and I'm older than you are, but it wasn't a conversation. So even if our parents are saying like not the best thing about it, it's great that they're just talking about it. So let this be a lesson to all of the parents out there. Just talk about it.
Yeah.
You don't have to say the perfect thing. There's not one sentence that is going to be the most perfect sentence you can ever utter that could, you know, absolve your kids from ever struggling with alcohol, but just this ongoing conversation so that they know that they could talk to you about it.
Exactly.
And also I think you seeing your mom, like you kind of saw both sides of the equation. So you saw your mom sober, and then you also saw your dad then being not sober, which is interesting.
100%. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's funny looking back because for sure growing up, I always thought like when I was a kid, I was like, I'm never going to drink. I'm never going to get drunk. Like from all the conversations. And then I remember like then when I started drinking, for sure, like taking her advice to heart, but then going off to university, it is so normalized to be like, let's black out tonight. And I remember laughing to my sister one time and being like, I know mom says like only have one or two, but like no one does that.
Right.
So I just felt like as I got older, I was kind of like, okay, mom. You know?
Yeah.
But I will say that like 1,000%, like I said in the beginning, like I wouldn't have had the awareness to even be thinking about my drinking.
Yes.
The way that I was, the way that like I think I felt so conflicted for sure the last probably 5 years of my drinking was because I kind of knew better. Like I knew that it wasn't good in my gut because I knew the red flags.
Well, and I mean, just the fact that you stopped drinking at 27, that is wild to me. And that has to be a testament to your mom and that she just kept the conversation going and that you guys actually talked about alcohol. Because the idea of quitting drinking at 27, like I said, like that was not even on my radar.
Right.
I didn't know it was an option.
I know, right? And I remember like for sure a big moment of clarity for me like in that year in Australia. I was like halfway through the year and I was talking to my mom and she had gone to a wedding the night before and she was sitting next to this guy who was like wasted and he was asking her all these questions about sobriety because obviously he knew he had a problem and he was like asking like, well, do you think I'm an alcoholic? All this stuff. And my mom says to me on the phone like, I mean, come on, you don't ask yourself if you have a drinking problem if you don't have a drinking problem. And when she said that, I was like, oh no, because like the whole time in Australia, it was the very first time, like I had little gut knowings, but the first time like in that year was when I first started being like, uh-oh, like I think I actually need to like take a look at my drinking when I get home kind of thing.
Yeah. And so how did that go? So after Australia, when you kind of had been drinking more than you ever had, what happened when you got home?
Yeah, it's so funny. I got home. My mom had bought the book, you know, being pretty aware of my shenanigans down there. She had bought the book, The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober by Catherine Gray.
Oh, so good.
My favorite quit lit.
Me too.
So I get home and it's the beginning of 2019. So I'm like changing my relationship with alcohol. I'm going to start drinking less. I'm going to moderate all that. And started reading it, couldn't finish it, wasn't ready, kind of carried on drinking, wasn't on the same level I was in Australia because I'm not like on holiday. I'm kind of like back and working my regular job and all that, but definitely was not able to reel it in the way that I wanted. And what happened was at the end of 2019, I went to my work Christmas party, blacked out, was an absolute wreck about it. Knowing that I have like, I could drink with my sisters and no one else and still wake up and spiral about how drunk I got, even though they're my sisters. So knowing like my level of waking up after being with all my coworkers and my bosses,
oh my God.
And,
like, yes,
not remembering leaving, I could not. Like I spiraled all weekend. I spiraled for months.
You're like, I'm still spiraling when I think about it.
Yeah. So after that, and then I had I blacked out a family Christmas party right after that. I was just like, oh my God. So I did dry January at the start of 2020.
Oh, yep.
But got through it. Okay. I don't want to say it backfired, but a little bit. Like I struggled.
Yeah.
Which at the time, my takeaway was, oh my God, this proves that like sobriety sucks. This proves sobriety is not for me. When in retrospect, I know the fact that I had such a hard time going a month without drinking is proof that I needed to get sober.
Right.
But I like counted down, stayed up until midnight to pour wine on February 1st, like totally made it my reward at the end. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm good.
You were like, I'm not celebrating January 1st. I'm celebrating February 1st. Yeah. You did the countdown. Everyone's like, what's Madeline doing? Why is she counting down? Okay, so that's funny that you were like, yeah, obviously this just proves this is not for me and I'm going to go head on to drinking now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how did that go?
Yeah, well, then a month later, COVID started because this is 2020. So then a month later, we're in lockdowns. And then again, I'm kind of back to my Australia self, like, well, the world's ending. This is stressful. We're all locked down. There's nothing else to do. I'm going to just drink every day, which I think a lot of people did.
It's amazing how many women come on here and say, you know, their stories like, yeah, going back and forth, maybe trying to moderate, some blackouts, you know, stopping again. And then COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's always, that's the drumbeat. And just by the grace of God, did I stop at the, like, January 19th, 2020.
Did you?
Yes.
Wow.
Otherwise, my story would have include and then COVID.
Well, good on you for stopping in January and then staying sober through COVID, because I feel like I would have been like, well, that's going out the window.
I know. I mean, looking back, it was a blur because, you know, I also had a 5-year-old, a 2.5-year-old, and a 3-month-old.
Oh my God.
And so people are like, yeah, so tell me about like your first, your early sobriety. And I'm like, huh.
Like, I was sleep deprived.
Yeah. It's a blur.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And so you went back to it like everyone else did.
Yeah. And then really just continued on, and it started to get more and more clear, like the link between, like, now I wasn't unaware of the fact that like I was having so much anxiety the day after drinking, and it just progressively got worse and worse and worse. So in the summer, I stumbled upon sober Instagram and like a couple sober podcasts where like my mom got sober through AA, and I grew up with the whole like, you're an alcoholic or you're not. And I think I knew that my drinking was problematic, but then I didn't feel like that alcoholic label necessarily resonated with me. And I was very like, well, the only justification for getting sober is like being an alcoholic. And if you're not an alcoholic, then like you can keep drinking, you know? And so the first time I kind of stumbled onto hearing it talked about in a different way of like, it's a spectrum. When I heard that, I was like, oh my God, like light bulb moment.
Yes.
Labels are irrelevant.
Yes.
Like, it does not matter if I fit in this box. Like, I know I'm struggling. And so I went on like kind of like a couple months of like, I would be like in a hungover spiral, and then I would like lurk sober Instagram. And then I woke up one morning, and like, I had been with like one of my best friends the night before drinking wine, socially distant in the backyard, and nothing went wrong. Like, I woke up like on the couch, makeup on, lights on, TV on, all that stuff. But she had texted me like, thanks for such a lovely night. Love you. Like, no reason to feel anxious. And I was a wreck. And it was just like this moment of like, I cannot feel this way anymore.
Yes.
Like, I cannot stand to keep living this way. I'm done.
Yeah.
That wasn't my last day one, but it was the day I decided. And then like a month and a half later was when I got sober for good.
Okay. I like that you said that that wasn't it. Right. But that is the moment that you come back to, that you see that you decided, but that it still takes some time because obviously, right. And this is, I think, where probably the way I look at it differs from AA is that like, we don't count days, and like the day one thing can be so, I don't know, it can feel depressing, right? And it can feel like it's this pass-fail situation, and why can't I get this? And so I always like these stories that it's like, okay, I knew it, and yet I still didn't stop yet because of course, right? Like, change takes time, change is hard, doing something differently, especially, P.S., when there's a highly addictive substance in the mix, it's going to take some time.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it was September and my sister's 30th birthday was coming up. We were going to like a winery. I was like, I'll do that, and the next day will be my day one. And I literally, we were on bikes going around the winery, and I was like, it's my farewell tour to wine.
like, that's a pretty good farewell tour.
It was. Yes. But the next day was my first day one, but it was like my fourth day one that stuck for me.
What did you do? Like, I'm always interested that next day when you're like, okay, farewell wine tour on the bikes. And then like you wake up the next day, what did you do? Mm-hmm.
I started reading immediately This Naked Mind by Annie Grace.
Yes.
That was so huge. I was like all over sober Instagram. I joined the Luckiest Club, Laura McCowan's virtual support group. So it was between like, I really credit my biggest things were the online support meetings, my mom. I talked to my mom every single day about sobriety, reading a ton of Quit Lit. And then I started my like sober Instagram page, like in my first month of sobriety, which ended up being such good accountability. But yeah, there was some back and forth. So that was my first day one. But then I think I did like two and a half weeks, then drank again on Thanksgiving, then a couple days, then drank again, then 3 weeks, then drank again, and then I was done. Like, it was a process of like back and forth, but I think those times I went back to drinking just solidified it for me, for sure.
Yes. And what do you think, like, how was the feeling different when you were like, okay, this is it? Do you think it was just like the culmination of everything that had led up to that point, and then you just kind of felt it? Or how did that feel different for you?
So I credit two things. I think one of them was that like I sort of had this light bulb moment of like when I was going back and forth of like 2 or 3 weeks of sobriety and then really wanting to drink, I kind of had this moment of like, okay, I can identify that this is a pattern. At the 2-3 week mark, I'm really, really going to want to drink. And if I'm going to let myself drink every time I really want one, I will keep doing this forever and I'll stay in this cycle forever. And it was this awareness and acceptance that I was going to have to sit with discomfort.
Oof.
Like it was that light bulb moment of like, ooh, I'm going to have to be uncomfortable.
Yes.
I'm going to have to sit with the feeling of wanting a drink and not have a drink through it. And I'm going to have to sit through the feelings that make me want a drink and not drink through them. It was just this light bulb moment so that when I got to that point where I really wanted to drink, I was like, well, I'm not doing it anymore. I just have to feel this way. It's not going to be fun.
Yes.
But it's also not going to be worse than how I'd feel if I drank.
Yeah, exactly. Like the idea that alcohol then would relieve the discomfort is a lie, right? Because I mean, sure, for 20 minutes or however long Annie Grace says. But yeah, this idea that I've been thinking about that a lot lately of like, who said the opposite of addiction is connection? Johann Hari. Johann Hari said the opposite of addiction is connection. And I totally understand that. And that makes all the sense in the world. And connection is necessary for sobriety, right? But also, I feel like the opposite of addiction is feeling uncomfortable.
Oh, interesting.
You have to be okay and make friends with discomfort. And like most of the time, we're just not good at that.
Yeah.
Look around. Like we like to be comfortable, right?
Right.
And that for me is why like yoga is really good for my sobriety, running, all of these things where I'm like physically making myself kind of sink into discomfort.
Oh, I love that.
And being like, oh, I know everything in your body is telling you to either stop or like get out of this pose or that you can't do it, right? Because I think our brains can really fuck us up. And then you, when you sink deeper and you're like, yeah, this is horrible. And everything in me is wanting to go and you stay.
Yeah.
Like, I think the key really is feeling uncomfortable.
My mom told me this quote, and I can't remember who said it, but the quote was, discomfort is the price of admission to a meaningful life.
Oof.
Isn't that so good?
Yes.
And it's so true.
It's so true. And when you think about, you know, childhood and growing up, and even like how I raise my kids, it's like everything around us when we're doing so many things to make sure that we're alleviating discomfort, when in actuality, what we need to do is like turn around and be like, no, not only is this like not going to destroy me, it's not going to take me down.
Yes.
Like I am strong enough to feel uncomfortable. And I don't think a lot of us realize that.
Yes, I think that's the thing with trying to avoid discomfort is like without even realizing it, we believe that we can't survive it.
Yeah, we think it'll just like take us down.
Yeah, and it's realizing like I can survive this feeling. I can survive this awful feeling. It's not going to kill me. It's not going to last forever.
Yes.
And then the more you do that, the more like empowered you get in that. Once you realize you can survive that, then you're kind of like, all right, well, I can do anything.
Right. Because the idea of like when we're pouring a glass of wine when we feel uncomfortable, we're immediately discounting ourselves.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You're immediately counting yourself out and you're saying, well, obviously this is too much for me to feel and I don't have the tools or I can't handle this. I can't withstand feeling this. Mm-hmm. And so then you teach yourself that that's true. Right? When it's such a lie.
Yes.
And so being able to then just sit and be, and I always think, I talk about this a lot, is like, you know, my brain is like a worst case scenario kind of brain.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm going to say like, okay, what's the worst? Okay, worst case scenario. The worst case scenario in sobriety is that you will feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You will feel discomfort. Mm-hmm. Like whether that's social anxiety, whether that's feeling misunderstood, whether that's feeling judged, like all of this stuff that we kind of run from in sobriety and all of the feelings. And the worst case scenario when alcohol is involved is fucking terrifying.
Yes.
Like go there in your mind. Like mm-hmm. it's terrifying. It's everything. It's you've lost everything.
Mm-hmm. So true.
It's just simple math. Mm-hmm.
It's not math.
It's just simple math, you guys. It's a greater than, lesser than situation, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think it can be powerful to sit with the worst case scenario. Like, let's say if you're sober and you're like going to like an event or a party for the first time and you're spiraling about it, it's like, well, play it out. Let's say worst case scenario, you go sober, you don't have fun,
yeah.
You feel awkward. People give you a hard time about not drinking, all those things. Then it's like, okay.
Totally.
That's the worst case scenario. I'll be okay.
Like, that's
I'll get through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, the worst case scenario for me is like, I don't know if it's a shoes on, shoes off situation party. And then I go and my shoes like make my outfit and it's actually like a shoes off situation and I don't have a pedicure. And P.S. I just have ugly feet. My feet are a situation. Okay.
Wait, I have really ugly feet too.
You do?
I do. My second toe's a lot like longer than my first toe.
Okay, mine is too. I'm lucky. I didn't even realize that online, but mine is too. I have a bunion from years of like retail and running. Like I just, my feet are just not the best things about me, okay? So for anyone asking for feet pics, it's just not going to happen. But like, okay, that is like the worst case. Mm-hmm. And then I have to take my shoes off and everyone sees my ugly, unpedicured toes. And then my outfit doesn't make any sense. Right?
Mm-hmm.
What? Like that is not.
Whereas like worst
awful,
case scenario if you got drunk at that event.
Yes. Like,
so much worse.
Think about worst case scenario, you're out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Christmas party.
Yes.
I've definitely had those situations where you're and where you don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no worse feeling than not knowing what the hell you did.
Oh my God. And like having to like ask friends and like, are they mad at you? Mm-hmm. Are you going to piece it together? Like mm-hmm. what happened? This was my 20s. While you were at 27 being like, you know what? I'm done. I was at 27 being like, yeah, more. Okay. We're going to black out tonight.
Oh,
yeah. And the idea that like, I don't know, that we can't withstand social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we drink, which brings on so much more social anxiety.
I know. The irony is so real. And it's so important to remember because our brain will play tricks. Our brain will be like, oh, this party would be so much easier. Like it'd be so much easier for my anxiety if I could have a drink to like release this. And it's like, follow that through. It is not the easier option. It's easier for a tiny little sliver of the night. And big picture, it's so much harder.
So much harder. And the only thing it's doing is just making you not care.
Yeah.
And so like, then sure, then I wouldn't care that I don't have a pedicure, right? And I'd be like, yeah, fuck it, doesn't matter. But I also wouldn't care that I have like a full life mm-hmm. to like protect and to have and to hold. Like, I wouldn't care about that either.
That's such a good reframe of that because it's like almost missing being able to be like, I don't give an F. And it's like, yeah, but you don't. And that's really not a good thing.
Yeah, you wouldn't give a fuck about like anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or alcohol makes you not, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So you were like deep into the Quitlet. Mm-hmm. And did you go back to Catherine Gray?
I did. Okay, so I went back. I read This Naked Mind, and then I did Catherine Gray, which was like the first one that was when I actually finished it after I couldn't the first time, but it's my favorite one. Those two are probably my favorite ones.
I love it too because they're really good together. They're good. Like This Naked Mind first, where you're just going to totally learn all about like how we've been brainwashed into mm-hmm. thinking about alcohol and the truth about all of it, more sciencey. Mm-hmm. And then you go into like the unexpected joy of being sober to me has so much soul.
Yeah.
And like that warmth to it.
I know, they're like a perfect balance.
Yeah, they are. I love that. Mm-hmm. And so what did you notice like right away? What do you remember that one of the first things that you were like, oh, okay, I kind of like this.
Oh my gosh. Well, I will say too, like from my first day one, the thing that also kept me going was like the last time I drank, I had been sober for like 3 weeks before I drank for the last time. Mm-hmm. And it was like a Friday night and I stayed sober. And like my stepdad and my sisters were drinking and I drank like a seltzer water with them. And for the first time ever, I felt this like natural high that happens when you socialize.
Yes.
And I had such a fun night. And then the next day I drank again. And in the morning I realized like, and I obviously woke up in a state of, you know, terrible. Mm-hmm. And I realized like I had so much more fun on the Friday when I stayed sober.
Yes.
And I was going out the next night, like just to sit on like a patio with my sisters. And I remember driving there and thinking to myself, like, I cannot wait to not drink tonight so that I don't feel this way tomorrow. Cause I was so hungover and feeling awful. And I was like, if I stay sober, like I'm going to wake up and not feel this way tomorrow. And I can't wait to not drink. Like, so that kept me going. Like that being my last experience of those two nights, like side by side, was a very powerful thing for me. And so I think the thing for sure that I noticed in my early days was just like how great I felt in the morning and like being able to wake up with peace, just waking up not in that state was the best feeling. And even if I had a really hard night, if I was like, my sisters were drinking, it's COVID, so I wasn't socializing with that many more people. Like if my sisters were drinking and I wasn't, and it was really hard, like I knew I had that to look forward to in the morning.
Yes.
And I think the other big shift I really noticed in those early days was like, I felt so proud of myself. And that really fueled me. Like it turned into this thing, even though it was hard and even though I was still navigating it and even though I was still worried about what other people were thinking about me not drinking, like it turned into this like proud accomplishment. And I would wake up with this like deep sense of pride in the morning every time I got through like a sober night. And just like comparing the two of waking up after drinking, hating myself, like being in a spiral of just like self-loathing, feeling like absolute garbage about myself, and then waking up and being like, I did a hard thing. Like I got through it and I can also leave any interaction with my head held high and like feel good about who I am. Like that's what really kept me going, I think, in my early days.
Yes. And the feeling of being proud of ourselves. Like, when do we really have that, right? We kind of lose that as we grow up. Like,
so true.
You can feel proud of yourself when you're like a toddler and like, it's cute. Oh, yeah, you learned to walk. But like, okay, well, I guess they're younger than toddlers when they learn to walk. But, you know, we learn somehow that that's got to go away, that that's got to be like tampered. And like, no one wants to hear that. Braggy, whatever. And then when you can come back to that, you're like, no, I'm actually proud of not necessarily something I did, but who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And like taking away this thing that allows me to come home to myself and be like, oh, wait, I had all of this stuff in me the whole time and now I'm just rediscovering it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Literally nothing compares.
Yeah. Right?
Yes, nothing. And how is it to share sobriety with your mom?
Oh, it's so good. She comes on my podcast a lot. We talked about, we have to do like an episode with both of our moms because yours does too, right?
Yes.
So fun. Oh, it's so good. It's so good sharing it with her. She navigated it in such a perfect way when I was first like exploring sobriety, because when I first started talking to her about it, I was very like sober curious and like I wasn't ready to fully like out myself to her yet until I knew I was ready to actually do it.
Yeah.
And she was very just like, made it so clear, like, you're figuring this out. I have no agenda for you. Like, made it not something that's that great. I felt like I had to do for her once I started talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, she even said, like, if you decide to go back to drinking, like, that's your choice. Like, you know what I mean? So she was such a, she handled it so, so well. Yeah. It's so nice getting to share it with her. And one of my sisters got sober, like, a little over a year ago. Uh-huh. So now the sober people in my immediate family now outnumber.
Yes. You guys are now like peer pressuring in the right way.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's so fun getting to. And the other thing too about like sharing it with my mom that was so cool is that I have always known my whole entire life that my mom was sober, right? So like it was just like a fact about her that I was like, yeah, like, and I thought it was cool. And like, I really, especially as I got older, appreciated how like lucky I was to have had a sober mom, so, you know, going to like friends' houses and seeing their parents drunk and stuff like that. Yeah. But what was really cool is that I never had lived through it. So I didn't like ask her much about it ever. And then once I got sober and I was going through it, I had such an appreciation. Like, I remember saying to her once, like, I don't know, like, maybe I quit too early. Like, I'm 27. I still have some of my 20s left. And she got sober at 21. So she's like, how do you think I felt? Like,
right.
So it was really cool going through it and then being able to ask her a million and one questions, being like, wait, like, what did you do in this scenario? How is like this person about it? Like,
yes,
I got to learn so much more about her because it was things I wouldn't have never thought to ask when I hadn't kind of gone through it myself. So that was pretty cool.
Totally. And it's like when you start to see your mom as a person and like not just your mom, you're like, wait, you're somebody else who has like her own life experiences and that don't include me.
Like, what was the timeline with your mom and you?
So my mom quit drinking, I think she'll be 2 years in August.
Oh, awesome.
She's going to be like, you don't know. So I did first. So she had always drank my whole life, but never, like, I think I've seen her drunk like once in my life, maybe. So she was definitely like a, I don't know, like it was
normal,
like beer,
quote unquote.
Yeah,
quote
unquote. Drinker, yeah. Yeah. But what's funny is that she just found like one of her journals and then she had said in her journal from like 10 years ago or something, like, yeah, I think I'm drinking too much. When in her story, like, she wouldn't include that in her story because she'd be like, have two or three beers, right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea that she saw herself already thinking that, and then going back and then, so she stopped drinking at like 68 years old.
Good for her.
Right?
Yeah.
She did because she wants to live forever. So she's on this kick of like, she stopped eating meat because ritual said, like, she's, you know, she's an animal. She's like hiking mountains and like
doing what?
I know, but she's good. So yeah, at 70 now, she's taking control of her health and longevity and all of that. So it would be good to have our moms on to talk to each other.
I know. I would love that. That's so cool that like you got sober and then she did, because I'm sure then it became something really fun for you both to share also.
Yeah. And she works with me now too because she's a therapist.
Oh, cool.
And so, yeah.
Oh, I love it.
And then my brother stopped. Yeah. My brother stopped drinking. It's a thing. Like when you're the influencer in your life, when you stop drinking, you just kind of are, because most people around us, even if we don't know, have this inner dialogue about their relationship with alcohol, and they just don't dare say it out loud because what we've been taught, right? Because then they think it's the alcoholic, it's the AA, it's the, you know, losing the privilege of drinking. And so then when you are the sober one, you kind of get to be the influencer without overtly influencing just by like living life and being fully sober.
100%. And it's such a scary thing to even voice to people out loud, because then you don't want to be perceived in a certain way. So even like not only living life sober and kind of like leading by example of other people getting to see the positive changes, but then also the people who have been struggling for a long time who are too scared to say it out loud. Now you're someone who they can actually like talk to about it.
Yes, totally. And we need that. Mm-hmm. Like we need to be sober out loud, because I always think like it's this, you know, the shame that we feel when we're drinking. Like, I'm not bringing that into my sobriety. Like, I refuse to feel ashamed about my sobriety because I don't. Like, that's the glorious part about it, is the shame is gone.
I know.
You know, when you work through that shame that you felt when you were drinking, then I'm not going to bring that into sobriety.
100%. And I love that the conversation's so different about it now. Like, because before there was so much shame and stigma in being sober because it meant like, oop, you had a problem.
Yeah. Like, what did you do wrong?
Yeah. Right. And instead getting to be like exactly what you said. Like, we live with so much shame when we're drinking.
Yes.
Like, I felt shame all the time, not only for like things that I would happen when I was drinking, but just for knowing that I drank too much.
Yes.
And when you know that in your gut, like, it just is this like, ugh, it's just this weight. And so getting sober and then getting to release that, and like, not only are you not acting out of character in ways that you regret anymore, but you're also just free from that like inner conflict of knowing that something isn't right for you, but still doing it.
Yeah, that inner conflict, man, that is like such a soul suck.
Yes.
Right? Like, right? It's just, ugh.
Yeah. When you know it, but you're too scared to act on it yet. Like, it's such a hard place to be.
Yeah, it really is. Let's talk about sobriety toolbox really quick. Like, what is your go-to when you want to, you know, I still call it escape because I think I can't sit in my feelings all the time. And so like, I still like to escape in like healthier ways. And so, yeah, what's your go-to?
For like escapism and sobriety?
Yeah.
I love a binge watch. I love a reality TV binge watch.
Yes. Girl, Bravo, you know it.
Vanderpump Rules, Summer House. Like,
which isn't it crazy how sobriety is now seeping into
so
that?
So many people are getting sober. But also like, that's cool to watch. But the cool thing about watching reality TV is that like, alcohol is so glamorized in like movies and TV, but you're not seeing any consequences.
Totally.
Whereas in reality TV, you see them get drunk and you might have a moment of like, oh, that looks so fun. And then you see them in the morning and they like wreck their life or like cheated on their girlfriend or whatever. And you're like, oh, right.
I think the best show, I get shit sometimes for, because I love Bravo and it's just my.
I love it too.
Yeah.
It's escapism. It is.
It's so,
Let us have this.
Yes. You can take it from my cold dead hands. But you know, and they say like, how could you like that, because they glamorize it, and I'm like, I am watching from the safety of my living room alcohol in all of its effects and everything. And I think the best show to see alcohol for what it really is Below Deck.
Oh, I haven't watched that one yet. Okay, is that my next one?
It has to be, because so all week long or whatever, 4 days, they're on charter and they're like working their asses off and they're just constantly counting down to when they're off charter, and these like 1 day, maybe 2 days, and they go wild. Like, they black out. You see it. Like, it's kind of like the 24-hour camera show, like Summer House, and you see it, and then you see the shame and the spiral the next morning, and they say, I'm never drinking again. Oh my God, I feel like shit. And then you watch them do it all again like 4 days later.
Okay, I need to watch that one.
Yes. You should watch the one with, what season is it? I think it's Below Deck Sailing is probably my favorite, because there are so many of them now, with Ashley. Okay, I'm going to tell you what season. Hold on. Below Deck Sailing.
I know, because I'm going to watch it. I'm almost caught up on the one I'm watching.
Which one are you watching right now?
Okay, well, I'm rewatching Summer House because I got my boyfriend hooked onto it. So now so I'm good. Like rewatching. It's my favorite. It's my favorite Bravo.
I think me too. I think, okay, so I have Katie on here. Once a month we just started Sobriety, where we talk about Bravo and, right? And I know. I think Summer House is my favorite too. I watched it recently, like because I didn't watch it before. I was thinking it was more like young kids, and I'm 43, but no, Kyle's 41. So
yeah.
Kyle's not young.
And he's not slowing down either.
Yeah, I know. And he's like, yeah, that one is fascinating, because that's another one too, where it's like a weekend show where they're like counting down to the weekend, and then Kyle's going to like work hard during the week and then just go crazy on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. We could have a huge talk about the current season of Summer House.
Yes, you should come on and we'll talk about, okay, hold on. I'm trying to, okay, we're going to go soon, but let me just look this up. Ashley and Gary, it's this season, Below Deck Sailing. Some of them are better than others. Season 3, Below Deck Sailing.
Okay.
Season 3.
I literally am writing this down.
Yes, she ended her appearance as one of the most controversial stews. Yes, she hooked up with him while he was highly intoxicated. Yes, there's
a lot of messiness.
Yeah, a lot. And then you just see it. Yeah. And then it calls into consent and stuff. Oh, and there's all of that on there too.
Oh, yes. Gosh. Okay. See, that is a good reminder. We don't wish that on, like, just the drinking in general, not that scenario. Just like watching people wake up full of shame, hungover. You don't wish that on anyone, but it's a really great reminder to watch it play out, especially when you're seeing the other side of like, can't wait to drink, can't wait to party. And it's like, totally. Oh, right. That is the result of that.
Yeah, we're inundated with the message that alcohol is fun and glamorous and all of that. And so, yeah, let's watch that play out then. That's why I always call it the influencers on Instagram who are going to do that. And I was like, okay, cool, but can you check in with us in the morning and like show us that too? Mm-hmm. Like show us the shame because that's there. And like we have to see it. And generally, we haven't been sober watching people drink. Right? And so that's a really unique opportunity that you get to watch and you get to see it play out.
Even like in real life, when you're at a party feeling FOMO, it's like, just wait till the end of the night then you'll be glad.
Totally. Yeah, just wait 10 minutes and then like the volume raises and then they start repeating themselves because their short-term memory's gone. And you're like, oh, right. Yeah. Okay, got it. Oh my God, Madeline, thank you so much for this.
Thanks for having me. It was so fun.
Yes. Yeah, tell everybody where we can find you and we will link it all in the show notes.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Happiest Sober. And then my podcast is Happiest Sober Podcast. Anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yay, I love it. And stay tuned because we'll have our moms on.
Oh my God, you guys, we have to. It'd be so fun.
Yeah. Okay, we will.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sober Mom Life. If you loved it, please rate and review it wherever you listen. 5 stars is amazing. Also, follow me on Instagram at The Sober Mom Life. Okay, I'll see you next week. I'm going to go reheat my coffee. Bye.
I'm Madeline, and I'm the host of the Happiest Sober podcast. I got sober in my 20s after a decade of gray area drinking, and the greatest plot twist of all time was realizing that alcohol, the thing that I thought made my life the most happy and fun and exciting, was actually the exact thing preventing me from living my happiest and best life. My mom is 40 years sober, and she joins me on my podcast very often. I like to call her my part-time co-host, and I also bring you solo episodes where I share my top tips, tricks, and mindset shifts in sobriety, and lots of how-tos for navigating all the things sober, from weddings to parties to holidays to bachelorette parties to trips. I'm also joined by so many guests who come on and share their sober stories, and they're all so, so inspiring. I'm here to show you that life doesn't end when you quit drinking. In fact, it's very much the opposite. And no matter what your relationship was with alcohol, life can be the absolute happiest when you're sober. New episodes come out every Tuesday. You can listen to Happiest Sober Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.